Are you tired of playing small, keeping your big idea locked inside of you, of looking forward to the someday in the future when you'll finally know enough or be enough to take the risk? This is Ideas in Play, a limited run podcast brought to you by the Play Day Summit. In this show, we explore how people in different professions can use play to let their big ideas out into the world so they can make an impact. If you want to know more about the Play Day Summit, head over to playdaysummit.com. Hey, how's it going? I'm Jeff Gibbard, and I'm a professional speaker, and I run a company called Super Impactful that has a number of other arms about it, but my big deal is I'm trying to change the world in a variety of different ways.
Hey, everybody. I'm Robbie Samuels. I'm a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I support people through hosting virtual events and working with speakers around that, and I also help entrepreneurs launch their business books.
You have such a good intro. The multi-passionate is such a good, I might steal it from you. Robbie, I'm so glad to have you here because I want to talk about something that I think is really, really important. And I think that you know a lot about this. And that is the different types of speakers that there are. I think there's a prevailing idea that, you know, a speaker is just this one person that gets up on stage and gets paid for it. But there are so many different ways that you can be a speaker. And one of the things I love about knowing you, being friends with you, talking to you, is that you are always reinventing yourself, and you have probably played in so many of these different types of speaker roles that you're the perfect person to talk about this. So I'm glad that we're here talking about this.
Appreciate it. Let's dive right in.
So let's start out. So obviously we all kind of know that there's this keynote speaker who gets paid what seems like silly sums of money to get up on stage at conferences in front of hundreds or thousands of people and gives a talk. But what else is there? Obviously, there's that, and there's even different flavors of that. But kind of what's the lay of the land in the world of speakers? You've been a part of the speaking industry for a long time. What have you seen out there of the different ways that people use speaking as part of their career?
I think one distinction is, are you paid to speak or do you speak to sell? So let's explore that a little bit. So paid to speak is what I was focusing on before the pandemic. I was recognized as a networking expert. I had a talk that I'd been doing for 10, 11 years called Art of the Schmooze. I would look to get booked to speak. I didn't really have a lot of offers beyond that. I did eventually write my first book. And so then I was able to sell, you know, copies of the book whenever I got booked to speak. But I didn't have, you know, coaching, consulting offers beyond that or training offers beyond that. Now I am more in the speak to sell side of the equation. I occasionally get paid well to speak, but I'm most often speaking for a lower fee than I used to be, or even no fee, but I'm speaking in front of the right audiences for that spin-off business, where I think that there's going to be people in the audience who want to book me for coaching, consulting, or maybe a paid speaking opportunity.
My career, I feel like, was flipped because in the beginning, when I began speaking, I had an agency. So a lot of my speaking was really trying to just be in front of people. And if they needed the services, they saw I had expertise that hopefully they would want to hire my agency. And now I've kind of flipped that. I'm more speaking, to have a message, to, you know, build a movement, to do different things like that and get paid to do those talks. And I think that that's a really good first distinction. I think another distinction that's probably worthwhile looking at is the different types of talks you might do. So keynote is the first one that comes to mind, but there's also things like workshops or breakout sessions or panels. How would you break down the myriad of different types of talks that you've seen out there? And you can take it either from the ones you get paid for or the ones where you're kind of looking to sell on the back of it.
One of the distinctions also is what you call yourself. So a workshop presenter might call themselves a trainer, but unfortunately that often means that they're devalued and they're not going to be paid as much for their expertise. It's a strange thing. It's just, it's the same talk, but if they call themselves a trainer, it seems more like a commodity where there's like lots of people doing that topic is sort of the assumption. Whereas when you're a presenter, well, now it seems more like you're focusing on your expertise that is distinguished from everyone else's expertise. So language seems to matter, even though the content may not be that different. So workshop presenters at conferences, whether they're virtual or in person, those are smaller, usually 60 to 90 minute programs. Hopefully there's some level of interaction with the audience. That's a little different than a keynote. A keynote's often not more than 60 minutes, could be as little as 15 or 20 minutes. And yet people, as you said earlier, you get paid outsized sums of money for their expertise or their notoriety. So if you think about a former president of the United States gets paid astronomical amounts of money to show up somewhere and speak for a few minutes, because there's very few people with their experience in the world. Similarly, celebrities or sports, you know, celebrities, they'll get invited to do something in that similar way. But us, like the everyday Joes, like us who are superheroes in our own way, we're probably not, you know, there's a very different sphere that we're all operating in. Keynotes is one form of this. I think that a lot of times, like I've been a part of the National Speakers Association for 10 years, and I feel like keynoting was what everyone was striving to be when I first got there, as if that was the pinnacle of success, was to be the keynoter. I feel like over time, particularly with the disruption of the pandemic, we recognize the necessity of having a more rounded, multifaceted, multi-revenue, multi-income stream business, that if you're solely doing any one thing, you really are missing out on other opportunities, and you're at risk of that one opportunity being shut off for ways that are completely out of your reach. It's not anything you did that stopped the in-person events from happening. So we have to be both comfortable in different modalities. So modalities today would be speaking on podcasts, is by the way, a modality, mm-hmm. but also comfortable on panels, comfortable being like the presenter who's got content to teach in more of a workshop presenter slash trainer way, or content to inspire in a keynote way. We also be good on virtual, in-person, or hybrid. And so there's different things we have to do to show up and share our talents.
Yeah. And then there's also, you could be an MC, you could be like, you know, I was always very interested in the distinction between someone who's a keynoter versus someone who does a presentation, because not every talk that's on a stage, even the big stage, is a keynote. Keynote, as I've tended to think about it, is sort of like the big ones. It's right. It's the opening, it's the closing, it's the one maybe right before lunch that kind of sends you into it. But so there's a lot there. I think one of the things that you highlighted that I want to have you play with a little bit is, I think the conventional wisdom is that what we all should be striving for, as you kind of alluded to, is we should all be looking to be the big keynoter, right? We all want the 25K gig where we open or close IBM's summit, right? But what I'm sure you've seen, and I know what you've even experienced, is that when the pandemic hit and when, you know, things shift or change in the marketplace about what sort of talks are in demand, being able to flex and adapt to the changing conditions is really important. So I think there's a bit of a flies in the face of maybe not even conventional wisdom, but more the prevailing idea of what we're after, is that you should be after big keynotes. Can you make the case of why really all of these other options are things that people might want to think about more than they do just solely focusing on being the keynoter?
Well, for one, they're more accessible. And one thing we didn't mention is that there's also the difference of people who have a job, a J-O-B, yep. and speak as part of their job, versus people who have a business where they speak to grow their business or to earn revenue for their business. So that's another distinction. Like, speaking is speaking, regardless of who's paying you. You might be getting a paycheck and getting opportunities to go out and speak about a product that you've been working on or you're marketing, or you could leave that job and go develop a business around that same product or offer. And now you're marketing your own services. So that's another distinction. I do think that it's easier to get into all the other forms, practicing through podcasting or pro bono talks for your Rotary or local chamber. Like, I think it's all stage time. It's one of the things we recognize is that we improve with stage time. And I also love the fact that now that virtual is more prevalent and we're all familiar with it, that you can host your own events without having to book a venue or deal with catering or deal with, you know, any of the other in-person logistics, that you can create your own stages to practice. And so you could be hosting masterclasses or workshops or whatever you decide to call it. Just please don't call it a webinar. But whatever you want to call it, to really get to kind of earn your way to bigger paychecks or to broaden who you reach out to attract the right kinds of prospects. The keynote is one avenue, and it's not for everybody. It's not everybody should aim for it, because it sort of requires often a lot of travel. One of the reasons I actually took my foot off the accelerator around being a keynoter was seeing my friend and mentor getting sort of, you know, traveling and then hearing that she was, you know, had the flu while she was in Russia. You know, it's like didn't sound glamorous anymore. It started to feel like, oh, well, maybe that's not my definition of you know, success. So I think that's the thing. We could continuously strive to improve, but we should also mark success based on our own judgment call and not going to be comparing ourselves to everyone else in the room, because they might be looking at what we're doing and thinking, wow, look at that person that has all that passive income because they worked really hard and they got a course onto LinkedIn Learning. And now they're getting residuals from that. They're getting royalties from that, that is paying their mortgage. Like, I really wish I had that security, right? Like, they're looking at that person and, you know, and that person might be looking at the person who's flying around the world. So the grass is always greener somewhere else. Develop content that you can share, better the world using your voice and your communication skills. And that is a speaker.
I appreciate that. And I also just appreciate that it creates the space for people to not have to do it one type of way. Right. And even for myself, I, prior to having kids, I was much more interested in traveling all over and giving talks everywhere. And I would have gone and done 3, 4, 5, 6 talks, but now I don't want to be away from home that long. I'd rather do 1 talk a month, 2 talks a month at most. And that would be about the limit. And after that, it's like, I don't want to be gone that long. I like seeing my kids in the morning. So I appreciate also that there's also giving the space for people to choose what works for them, and that there are so many different ways that you can speak and make a career out of it and apply it, to further whatever things that you want to do in your own life. But I also appreciate that you, you have this, this commitment to making sure that you're delivering value and helping people progress and helping people change the world in their own unique ways. So that's something I always appreciate about the way you do it. To kind of round this out, if we're looking at the different ways that people could speak, what are some things that you might leave people with as sort of very actionable steps to determine what type of speaker they might want to consider being, how they could prepare to be successful in that particular type of endeavor, any sort of steps or frameworks or questions, thoughts, actionable tips that people can take away? What would you advise people as a starting point?
Well, first, I want to go back to something you said about an MC, because we really didn't discuss that. And for me, that was a revelation that an MC is a speaker. And it's really interesting because the National Speakers Association has this earned designation, certified speaking professional. And they recently, in the last few years, allowed MC hours to count towards speaking hours. So they also started to recognize this is a real skill, because it requires, done at its highest level, research, improv, you know, like speaking skills, stage crowd skills, work, crowd control, engagement. Like, there's just so much that the MC role plays into the experience that participants are having in the room and whether the event is a success for an event host. And similarly, I play that role virtually. And so one of the things I think anybody can do, and I always suggest this, is to start hosting your own virtual gatherings. It doesn't have to be something you commit to forever, but you might say, for the next 3 months, I'm going to host a weekly or every other week or monthly gathering of professionals in my area or my prospects in my area or something, because you will get better at that. And if you really have very little skill in the areas of managing all the tech and knowing how to MC and all that, I would suggest starting with just gathering some friends. It could be people from an alumni group or something like that that you're a part of, just as a way to practice those skills, because stage time matters on virtual as much as it does in person. I got known for my skills on Zoom because of the amount of hours I spent working on Zoom and learning the settings and how to design for this space versus designing for in person. And that would be the last thing I want to leave people with, is purpose first design is so important, no matter what format or what kind of situation you're doing, whether it's a workshop or it's a keynote, understanding who are you attracting into the room. So if it's the concurrent session, well, only some of the people from the conference are going to be coming to this, thinking about who you're trying to attract and making sure that's really clear in the description who it's for, so that they are seeing themselves in that description and they are called into your room. Then the other thing is to think about, well, when they come in, they're thinking, feeling, and are doing one thing. The end of your time together, they're thinking, feeling, and hopefully ready to do something else. That is the transformation, and really what that leads you to are the objectives. So understanding that you're designing to help people move to specific objectives around how they're thinking, feeling, and or doing something will help you decide what exercises to include or not include, what technology to bring in or not bring in, how to facilitate the space, how to use the space. And then I would also suggest that we always design in modules. But what I mean by that is if you were planning for a 75-minute program and you're suddenly told you only have 45 minutes, you should be really clear which pieces of your talk, of your presentation, are not as critical to helping people reach those outcomes. So you can pull that module out and you don't want to reference it. You don't want to say, oh, well, we would have had more content. We ran out of time. You don't want to let people feel like they're missing something. You want to have the skill to jump to the parts of your deck if you're using one that showcase the pieces that you want people to see. But understanding how to do that and also how to expand. So if you had 45 minutes and now you have 90, you have to understand how to add in some exercises that might take up some time and yet also lead people to specific outcomes. No one wants their time wasted. We want to feel like we leave these spaces more enriched in some way and ready to share what we've learned. And so those two things, purpose-first design and sort of modular design, go kind of hand in hand no matter what kind of speaking you do.
Amazing. Robbie, I'm so glad that you're going to be at the Play Day Summit with us because the people who are listening, watching, if they are interested in learning more about how to do this purpose first, purpose centered design, how to do any of that stuff, and all of the various skills and things that you bring to the table, I'm so glad they have the opportunity to meet you and connect with you and learn about that. So I'm hoping the people that are listening, watching, that they come to the Playdate Summit because you have a chance to explore your big ideas and figure out which sort of a speaker should I be to bring this sort of idea to life, and how could it best be fit into my career and my career goals. So hope to see everyone there. Robbie, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this. And we hope to see everybody in the next episode.
See you then.
Ideas in Play is brought to you by the Play Day Summit. To see if the Play Day Summit is coming up near you and to get tickets, go to playdaysummit.com.